Ms. Becker?
Here.
Mr. Edwardson?
Here.
Ms. Vitashevsky?
Here.
Mr. Gregory?
Present.
Mr. Jones? Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Weldon?
Here.
Mayor Kelch?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Before we get into the special order of business, I would like to acknowledge that we have an assembly person here with a birthday. Would that birthday person please stand up?
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mary. I understand it's 39 again.
What do you mean again?
All right, you go with that.
I will.
Okay, we have a special order of business, the Municipal Employee of the Year for the state of Alaska.
Yeah, woo!
That is pretty outstanding. Mr. Gary Gillette, will you come up here, please?
Mr. Gary Gillette has been instrumental in leading three major recapitalizations, forcing this mayor to come up with three different speeches, planning and modernization efforts for the Juneau waterfront. You did the port one, which was one of the, well, which was the major construction project we've seen in Santa Barbara, if I'm correct, $54 million. You did Statter Harbor, and you did Douglas Harbor, and had fun doing all three of those. Well, that much getting done should take 9 years. And he has worked hand in glove with the international renowned artist to design, produce, and install 10 20-foot stainless steel sculptures aligning the Juneau waterfront. And that didn't have any controversy at all, did it? So, yeah, it just went really smoothly. I'd like to call up our port director, Carl, you could tell, and he's going to get into the real nitty-gritty of these designs. Mr. Yucatel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's my privilege to work with Gary day in and day out, and the mayor talked about the three major projects that were completed, and really, you can't underestimate or what it really takes in this day and age to put together a major capitalization project. Everything from funding to permitting to the public outreach, there's just a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into every project that we complete. And amazingly, the projects that Gary's touch, he's got the Midas touch, that these projects have come in under budget, on time, and delivered, you know, just world-class facilities. So the mayor mentioned the $54 million cruise ship dock project. That project has won national awards already from the Pile Driving Contractors of America. It's received three regional awards from Engineering News Report. It's also, we just found out that Precast Concrete Institute has just given a national award, and there's still other awards forthcoming. In addition to just overseeing these projects through, he's really been the impetus of all of our planning that goes on. He's been an employee for 25 years, knows the ins and outs of CDD and city engineering, where he worked before he came to Docks and Harbors. So he understands the value in planning and has really led the efforts for not only the Bridge Park to Norway Point planning efforts that have resulted in our applications for Tiger Grants. He's also led the efforts in the Yak Bay Marine Station procurement and is really just working terrifically to get the urban plan, Taku Dock Marine Park done. So he just does so much And it's great that he gets this statewide recognition.
So, you've been an employee for 25 years,
sure.
8 with the Port of Juneau. I'm not going to say anything about what's written here about you retiring in the near future because I don't think you've checked with us yet. Okay? Not only is he dedicated and competent professional in his vocation, but he shares his talent throughout the community. He has volunteered on the CBJ Historic Resource Advisory Committee, passionate about retaining the Juneau history, active in the Treadwell Historic Preservation and Restoration Society, the buildings at the Treadwell Mine site, and under a lease agreement. Renee, would you come up here? Yeah, come on up, please. Under a lease agreement with CBJ Parks and Recreation Department, Gary and Renee operate and maintain the nonprofit Last Chance Mining Museum. Thank you for that. That is phenomenal. It serves not only locals, but it serves each of the tourists that get off the ship that go out there every year. Gary is also the caretaker at Sentinel Island Lighthouse, and in this role he volunteers his time, skills, and resources to restore the remote and historically significant 1902 lighthouse. And this was the plaque that was given to Gary. And Renee, have you looked at it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, can you see where there may be one little flaw on there?
No, I would not see anything in carving.
Okay. Our proofreaders felt the word too wrong. Yeah. So this is going to go back, and we'll get it redone. Congratulations.
Speech.
Would you like to give a speech, Gary?
Oh.
I just want to say that this is an incredible honor and give a lot of credit to my boss, Carl Yucatel. I thought I was going up to Anchorage to meet with the Corps of Engineers, and then he left a message to bring a tie, so I figured, oh, we must be meeting with the Colonel of the Corps of Engineers. And then he invited me over to dinner at the Captain Cook. And until I got there and saw so many CBJ employees, I was like, okay, now what's going on? But I really really didn't know what was going on until Mary was up at stage, and I heard my name and looked kind of confused and looked up, and she's motioning for me to come up there. So it was a great surprise. It's a real honor, and I've enjoyed working for the city for all those years, and especially Docks and Harbors for the last few. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Amy, would you like to make an introduction for us?
I do. In the back, I'm going to make her stand up. This is Teresa Bowen. She's the newest addition to the law department. She comes to us from the North Slope Borough, where she was, hopefully get this right, assistant district attorney, or DA, acting borough attorney, an assistant borough attorney, then the acting borough attorney, and then she recently was with their capital improvements project, capital improvements department. So she is going to be helping us with engineering. She's working with the school district. She has a lot of experience with airports, so she has been an excellent addition so far. I'm very happy to have her.
Welcome. And you realize that when you're new, you stay until the very end of the assembly. No sneaking up because we are watching.
Mr. May.
They don't go that late.
She actually told me that some of their assembly meetings lasted more than one day, so she will be happy if she's out by midnight.
How long was the day at that time of year?
Good point. Yes. All right. Assemblyman Jones, have you joined us?
I have, Mr. Mayor.
All right. We're now at approval of minutes.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that minutes be approved and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Corrections? Minutes are approved. Manager's request for agenda changes.
Mr. Mayor, I have two requests, please. The first one, as listed in the printed packet on Ordinance 2017-32 regarding the transfer of property to Department of Transportation for an Egan Drive project, I'm recommending that this ordinance be pulled. DOTPUF and our Lands Department have come up with a revised, more efficient course of action that requires that this ordinance be amended and reintroduced. So I'm asking that that ordinance be pulled, and we'll come back to you at a later date.
Okay. You said you had two things.
And the second one, Ordinance for Introduction 2017-35, that's item 1A under Ordinances for Introduction, Ordinance amending traffic code relating to electric vehicles and providing for a penalty. I'm recommending that this be forwarded to Public Works and Facilities Committee for work and be brought back at a future date.
Okay. Is that clear with everyone? All right. Public participation on non-agenda items. Do we have anyone signed up to? We do. Robert Sewell. I'm just checking to see where that is. That's so we will need to pull that off, will we not?
Next.
Okay, so we'll get to that when that's pulled off then. Vicki Jo Kennedy, if you'd like to come up, please. Okay. And if you would just state your name, Ms. Kennedy, and address.
Vicki Jo Kennedy, formerly of Kodiak Island, and in Homer, and now I'm in Juneau, don't you know? Okay. Been here about a month. Haven't been here since 1988 when I worked for Alaska Sightseeing Tours. And it's grown, and the docks out there are beautiful. Mr. Gary did a really good job. I was very impressed. The sculptures are beautiful. But I'm here because I'm a little disappointed for what I'm seeing on Franklin Street with this snow accumulation. You had the busiest shopping day, one of them, of the year on Friday, and the snow had been plowed off the roads, but it's all in the gutters and along the curbs. The parking got critical because it's not being picked up. It's being pushed over and piled high, and the people can't even get out of their cars. They had to park narrower and narrower. The buses had a hard time getting through. We got about 2 more inches today. Now it's raining, so it will come down. But I don't understand why you don't have the funds to pick up the snow. That would never happen in Kodiak. We have a small team for Public Works that goes along and picks it up as it's plowed, to keep our streets open where you can park and open your doors and get out. I mean, I don't know if any of you were down here Friday, but there was so much snow piled up, they really couldn't get out of their cars. So, you know, I understand you spent the $54 million. I heard the amount on the dock. Maybe you should put a little aside for snow removal. I mean, it's dangerous out there. I just walked a couple of blocks, and it's pretty slick. And then when you have to climb over the berms because some of the crosswalks aren't even open, it's kind of scoopy, but that's just my opinion. I'm glad to be back in Juneau, and I'm going to be here through the whole legislative session, and I appreciate it, but I'd sure appreciate you getting some of that snow out, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Duff Mitchell. Oh, you're talking about the bus purchases, though, aren't you? Okay, so that will be on the agenda item. Got it. All right. That closes
the public participation on non-agenda items and brings us to the consent agenda items. Mr. Nan Curvis. We had a public request from Mr. Sewell for a consent agenda change, and that would be the liquor license transfer, Thibodeau, Douglas, Depot package store. Any other requests for consent agenda changes from the public? Any from the assembly?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I didn't hear what that request. This is for Thibodeau. What was the request pertaining to? What's the topic?
Just so that they could testify on it.
Okay. Not to change it, but to pull it off.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. Now we're at assembly action. Mr. Nan Curvis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of the consent agenda with the following exceptions. That ordinance 2017-35, 1A, under ordinances for introduction, be removed and forwarded to the Public Works at the manager's request. And also item 3A, under consent agenda, the liquor license transfer, be pulled for public comment. Other than those two changes, I request or recommend the consent agenda be adopted.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry, was the manager's request to remove the ordinance for introduction from the consent agenda or simply to change where it goes?
Mr. Mayor, it was my intention to forward it to Public Works and Facilities Committee for work until such time that it can come back for hearing. I'm not sure that it makes much difference if we remove it from introduction or not. I mean, we have got...
It does make a difference in the timing. Normally we introduce them and then refer them to the committee so that you have time to work on them, and then the committee forwards it back to the assembly for public hearing. But alternatively, you can remove it from the consent agenda, and when it's ready to come back, you would just have to reintroduce it and then wait a meeting for the public hearing.
Mr. Manager.
And I guess the point I'm trying to make is there's not a pressing date that this would need to get done by.
So what was your druthers when you introduced this? I mean, in the manager's report.
My druthers would be to leave it on. We've got it introduced and just refer it to committee for work and set it for a public hearing at a future date.
Okay. So we're introducing it tonight, sending it to which committee?
Public Works and
Facilities.
Public
Works. Mr. Jones. Public Works, and bring it back when we have a hearing. All right. So are we good so far? Okay. Is there any objection to the consent agenda? All right. Consent agenda is approved. Liquor license transfer. Madam Clerk.
This is a liquor license transfer for Thibodeau's Douglas Depot Package Store license number 828.
Mr. Manager.
This liquor license transfer is before the assembly to either protest or waive its right to protest. Package Store liquor license number 828 from Thibodeau's Market Inc., DBA Thibodeau's Liquor, location no premises, to Thibodeau's Market Inc., DBA Thibodeau's Douglas Depot, location 1017 3rd Street, Douglas, Alaska, 99824. Finance, Police, Fire, and Community Development Departments have reviewed the above liquor license and found it to be in compliance with CBJ code. In the event the Assembly does protest the transfer of this license, CBJ 2025 requires notice with specificity regarding the nature and basis of the protest to be sent to the licensee and provides the licensee an opportunity to exercise their right to an informal hearing before the Assembly. The 60-day comment period for local governing body action on this license will expire as of Monday, December 25th, 2017. I recommend the Assembly waive its right to protest the above liquor license transfer.
Okay, there is public testimony. Mr. Sewell, if you'd like to come forward and testify, please. Again, stating your name and address, please.
Good evening. My name is Robert Sewell. I live at 903 Fifth Street in Douglas, fairly closely positioned to the suggested location of the new license. I wanted to say before I launch into a couple of remarks that congratulations to those who were reelected and to Mr. Edwardson, who joins the assembly. I come and speak as an individual. However, I do also serve as the president of the Douglas Island Neighbors Association. There are five quick points, and then I'll let you get on certainly with the rest of your evening. Thank you for entertaining these comments. The first is, I'm not a teetotaler. This isn't part of the reemergence of the temperance union. I do enjoy a beer just as much as anyone else. The concern also is not about, strictly speaking, the transfer of the license from a parent corporation to a doing business as. Actually, the issue is the process by which such decisions are arrived at. There's some concern, I think, in amongst Douglasites that there wasn't useful notification of this action. Or put differently, there's precious little evidence that the residents of Douglas, who will be affected by the packaged liquor arrangement, were consulted. There's a more general issue here. Let me see if I can summarize. I think there's a general perception that the planning for Douglas Island in general and for the old town site has grown lax or non-existent or is not current. I guess you can pick your flavor. That would not be a concern, except it increasingly has become clear that various kinds of developments are being offered, some of those ardently, that were a surprise to the Douglas residents who might be most affected. The packaged liquor notion is one of those. I will tell you that there are some residents that would not like to have that important key four corners look anything like the breeze-in arrangement near the bridge, which we could. But more generally, there are other notions that have been pushed for either the spreadsheet of this or that private interest or for bureaucratic expedience that have surprised some of the island residents. You may recall not too long ago, for instance, a similar kind of suggestion, similar in the sense that it was a surprise and also one that may have affected a lot of people in the old Douglas town site, was, and I won't belabor it, the appearance of the suggestion that we would have a pretrial facility within feet of a long-established child care center, Montessori. There have been others. We are now being introduced to the notion that a private enterprise would like to have more than 100 residents or non-residents a day appear by bus to go walking out through the treadwell to a zip line. All these ideas, and we could come up with others, some of which have come across your desk, are probably not wrong-headed in and of themselves, but I guess the main message from us to you tonight is that we should probably make more progress on the public process. Thank you for your time. As a suggestion, we would request that the item be referred or remanded to the HRC for further general public discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sewell. Is there any question for Mr. Sewell? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I bring it back to the assembly. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Brankus. A general question. We looked at the Human Resources Committee tonight. Some of our rules of procedure were in our packet, and one of them specifically said the HRC is supposed to look at liquor license applications and transfers and the right to protest like this. And I remember the last time I was on HRC, we did that. Can anybody help me with why that process ended? Because it's still in the rules.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, Mr. Keel, I think it is the liquor licenses which one of the departments who's asked to comment on them objects or has a reason to object, then that goes to the HRC so that the department can communicate with the HRC before it comes to the assembly.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Jones.
Thank you. As a past chair for 3 years of the HRC, that's correct. We only looked at those that there was some issue that had been raised by any of the departments. As you know, in order to have a protest survive a review by the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, Beverage Control Board has to determine whether or not the assembly's objection was capricious or arbitrary. And barring any problems with any of the city departments, it would be hard to justify. And so we only review those that are only reviewed those that were problematic for the department. Failure to pay sales tax, failure to pay property tax, failure to live up to a previous judgment or agreement to pay taxes were generally the major ones that it was brought before the HRC. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Just to clarify, this business to operate would need a conditional use permit. Is that not correct in that area?
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, I consulted with Mr. Seidel this afternoon on that topic, and the answer to that is no. A conditional use permit would not be required. It's an allowable retail use in that zoning district. So a building permit, if building modifications were required.
Because it's in?
I don't know the exact zoning district. But
it's allowable in that, wherever it is, it's allowable in that zone. Okay,
correct.
Okay, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Manager, did CDD's review extend to the distance from an entrance to the property line of the adjacent church? It's hard for me, even with the funny pacing method that that the ABC board uses, it's hard for me to get 250 feet from Douglas United Methodist.
It's on here, the application.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Just to answer Mr. Keel's question, the according to the application, it's 1,100 feet from Montessori and 250 feet from the net. That's what it says in the application. I don't know if that's true, but that's what it says.
Mr. Mayor, I believe that staff would have looked at 2025, our ordinance, and the 250 feet, I believe, is in the state rule. So I do not know if they verified compliance with the state rules, but it seems kind of unlikely that they would have done that. They would have looked to our code to find if there were reasons to recommend protest to the assembly under our code. It's my guess, but I don't know.
Mr. Keel.
Mr. Mayor.
Oh.
Mr. Keel and then Mr. Jones.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I would move that we refer this question to the Human Resources Committee for further review.
Okay. Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, if you could have Mr. Keel clarify, I understand the 60-day comment period ends December 25th, and I believe we have Assembly and HRC on December 18th. So if we could clarify that that's the date that we're talking about.
Yes, please.
Okay. Mr. Jones, did you wish to, well, let me go back to Mr. Keel. Do you wish to speak to your motion?
No, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Jones, do you wish to speak to Mr. Keel's motion?
No, I just would object. I think that the state law that the state works on is it's 20 feet from a building to the public entrance to a church building. And if one of the issues that I've had some discussions with the attorney on related to these distances has been whether or not the city would be measuring those distances for marijuana because of my being on the Marijuana Control Board, and I was told that is not in the city's business since that's a state law, and therefore they wouldn't be measuring the distances. And I would hate to, or maybe I should applaud, setting a precedent of dealing with apparently the issues on distances with these, and in that the city generally doesn't look at those distances because those are the state rules. So I think at this point I would object to moving this to the HRC.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, there has been an objection. Will the clerk please read the motion and then call the roll?
To move the matter to the Human Resources Committee on December 18th, 2017. Okay. Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Weldon?
No.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mayor Kelch?
No.
Motion carries 5-4.
All right. That takes us through the consent agenda. And we are now at public hearings. Ordinance 2017-06-S. Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $1,513,730 as funding for the replacement of buses for Capital Transit, grant funding provided by Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and by the Equipment Replacement Reserve Fund Balance.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate $1,513,730 for the replacement of 3 buses and 4 caravan vehicles for Capital Transit. Grant funding in the amount of $1,210,985 is provided by federal funds through the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the local match requirement of $302,745 funded from the Equipment Replacement Reserve Fund balance. This funding will replace 3 35-foot New Flyer buses purchased in fiscal year 03, which have each provided over 13 years of service and over 500,000 miles. The funds are from the Federal Transit Administration and come through the state of Alaska .puff. The replacement of these buses is in the Capital Transit 2014 Transit Development Plan and adopted by the Statewide Transportation Improvement Plan. It is planned to replace these 3 buses from our current contract with Gillig LLC. Public Works and Facilities Committee reviewed this appropriation ordinance at its November 20, 2017 meeting and recommended forwarding it to the Assembly for approval. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Okay, public comment, Mr. Mitchell.
Hi, I'm Duff Mitchell, Juneau, Alaska. I'm going to speak to this ordinance and then also the following one just to save time because they're kind of related comments. I'm going to speak to something with the Juneau Commission on Sustainability that went on in 2015. We haven't had a meeting since, and we saw this ordinance come up, but I just want to bring you up on some history. In 2015, there was an RFB for purchase of diesel buses, and we made an inquiry to then-city manager Kim Kiefer on to you know, the RFB did not open up for competition for electric buses. We weren't asking for a purchase of electric bus. We're just asking that they be at the table to compete, and that many communities, when you do life cycle costs over the full 12, 13-year period, they actually save money. In fact, every study I've seen shows that you save hundreds of thousands of dollars over the life of a bus, even though the initial capital cost of the bus of electric bus is higher. I'm not here to get in the way of the ordinance being passed, but in that letter back to us, there was going to be more public discussion, more hearings, bringing up electric bus manufacturers and to try to get a better handle on the life cycle costs and the opportunities that could come about from electric vehicles. Also in that letter, it said that we'd only be purchasing 3 diesel buses, and that would be it. And now we're buying, I think, 5 or 6 more. We have 18 buses, I believe it's 18. And I just want to make sure that we have an opportunity to start getting some electric buses into the cycling, or at least have the opportunity to evaluate if it's a cost-effective way to go. Now, I did call up Proterra today, and Proterra is working with our CBJ on, we got a grant for $400,000 for one bus, and perhaps 2 buses under that could be purchased. And Proterra says, hey, CBJ does a real good job of, you know, these contracts, ordinances look like they're getting pretty good buses for the price. So I'm not here to say that people haven't done their homework or that people aren't being fiscally proper in it. I'm just saying I'd like to just ask that in the process that we look forward to how could electric buses be integrated or at least be at the table for future discussion. I know that our CBJ Public Works has been looking at electric buses because they applied for a grant, got it. I also know that we could apply for another one this year, and we should probably do so to keep pulling in federal monies for those types of things. I would just lastly add that Juneau is a very progressive electric vehicle community. We have one of the highest per capitas in the nation. We kind of lead things. This recent EV charger thing actually made national news because people are watching what we're doing here in this community. And I would just like us to continue that leadership and that growth and at least keep that opportunity going forward as we look for electrification of transportation. Not just because it's good for the environment, but because it's based on hydropower. And I think the studies show that it actually saves, it's financially and fiscally responsible. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Any questions for Mr. Mitchell? Seeing none, again, thank you. Anyone else wish to testify on Ordinance 2017-06-S? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Gladyszewski.
I just had a question. We have had this discussion, but not probably on the radio. If the manager could please give us, because my memory is similar to Mr. Mitchell's about we were going to buy a few more, and we were going to try to get a, figure out how to get electric buses. So could you please explain where we are?
I will, and if Mr. Foster wants to correct me on the details, we'll invite him up. But essentially, we do have 18 buses. Our current fleet is all diesel. Our buses are paid for with grants from Federal Transit Administration, and I believe it's a 80-20 match. 80% from federal government, and they give us enough money in that grant program to purchase the diesel or now the new generation diesel buses that have an exhaust treatment system on them. We did apply through the a different program twice before we were successful through the Low No program to get one electric bus, which is on order. The cost of an electric bus is roughly twice the cost of a conventional bus. I do agree with many things that Mr. Mitchell said about our environment being favorable for the use of electric vehicles. And by environment, I mean our road system, the numbers of vehicles we drive, the hills, the temperatures that we have, and essentially the moderate temperature range that makes for long battery life. So there are some very favorable reasons for electric vehicle usage in Juneau. We are incentivized through the grant program to continue to purchase the diesel buses with the exhaust treatment system, and we will try to get grant funding for more electric buses. And I think our best path of success on this would be FTA amending the rules, and I think that's something that we could comment on, but that's probably admittedly a long process. And I probably could answer more questions, or Mr. Foster could go into more detail as well if need be.
Thank you.
Ms. Weldon and Mr. Keel.
Remind me where we are in the queue for the electric bus. It seemed to me it was quite a long queue.
So all of our buses, it takes from time of order to delivery more than a year. And I think the electric bus, I thought the number I saw was 16, 18 months, and I'm getting a nod from Mr. Foster that that's accurate.
It's about equivalent.
There are a small number of bus manufacturers in the United States. Either way, you're going to wait a while for delivery of a new bus.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Manager, you said almost twice the cost. Is that upfront cost or life cycle cost?
Through the mayor, that would be upfront cost.
And do we have a sense of how they compare on life cycle cost?
I would invite Mr. Foster to comment on that. I would say we're going to be going on manufacturer provided information, so obviously we don't have a track record of maintaining electric buses. And with that.
Yeah, Mr. Foster, if you would identify yourself.
Ed Foster. I live at 9450 Delray Road. We don't have a really good sense of life cycle cost. I'm working with the manufacturer right now trying to establish that, and they don't even have a good idea. I mean, we haven't had an electric bus in Alaska, and it all depends on what their electricity is going to cost us, and the maintenance is a big unknown. But they haven't been real responsive as of yet. They've got a lot going on right now because they just issued all those grants, and I think they said they have like 28 different communities that are they're working with. So, and we're only ordered one bus, so we're a low priority. But common sense, it is good. The life cycle cost is going to be cheaper. They just sent me a list of suggested recommended repair parts list for the electric bus, and it was about $31,000 worth of parts that they recommend I have on hand to keep it running. So I don't hope that's not an indication of how often they break, but it's coming from them. The diesel bus, I mean, the unknown is with the electric buses is how they're going to operate. You know, it's not as much of a cost difference as it is can we maintain the service we're providing with electric buses. And that's an unknown. And, you know, the plan is to get this one on board and use it on all the different routes, because some of our routes are long, some of them are short, and the opportunity to recharge it in some routes is very slim. And, supposedly it'll make a full day's schedule based on what they're telling us the miles we can get out of a charge. And hopefully it is. And we run this one bus through the tests and see how it performs for us. That'll give us an idea whether how many more buses, electric buses, we can deploy in our system without affecting the service. I mean, the last thing we want to do is throw a bunch of electric buses out there and then have half the fleet dead or not be able to provide the service that we are currently providing. The next three buses that will be scheduled for replacement is in 2021. The initial contract we put out for the diesel buses was for 11 buses. Three in 2016, three in 2017, and four in 2018. and we're coming up on 2018's purchase now. So when that's done, the contract will be done. One of the four in 2018 we have eliminated from our quota so that we can use that money to finish paying for the electric one, because the grant we got was for about half the cost of the bus. And Ketchikan took that allocation. So we're only buying three diesel buses in 2018 when we originally planned to buy four.
Just one more quick question. You say you don't know how they'll perform. There have been electric buses on the road all over the country. Are there no other similarly situated climate-wise towns that have them that can be an indicator?
I suppose that some of the areas that have them could be considered similar climates, but climate is just one piece of the puzzle. You know, the way you drive them, the distances you travel, the starts and stops you make, it all plays a role in it. And the way we use them, the routes we put them on, can affect how far we can get with it.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just one point of clarification. You said that it is more... it's less expensive to operate. Were you talking about the diesel or the electric buses?
I would suspect the electric bus is cheaper to operate. But with the not knowing the cost of maintenance, I can't swear to that. It's just, I don't know. And it's going to require us to retrain all of our mechanics to work on them. I mean, it's a different animal altogether. So we're going to have to get some mechanics educated.
Thank you.
But I was able to obtain some FTA alternative fuel funding to replace some of the small unit support vehicles that we have that are scheduled to be replaced with electric vehicles as well, which we're trying to do in 2018. Will just be sedans.
Okay. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Just to understand that, so are these this is the 2018 buses we're talking about? That is on the, so this is the last buses in this series of buses?
No,
or is there one more year of buses? I'm trying to understand.
The ones that the manager just introduced was for 2017.
Okay. So then in a year from now, you will be asking to buy three more buses?
That's the next ordinance.
The next
ordinance will be introduced and will be 2018's.
Right, okay. So there is no opportunity. Do you have to? 2021 is the next one? Time you expect to buy buses?
2021, yeah, that would be the next time we have buses that are at the end of their life cycle. It'll be 2021.
Thank you.
Further questions? May I have a motion, please?
I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2017-6S, and I ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing, seeing none, motion carries. Ordinance 2017-06-T, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $2,148,195 as funding for the replacement of buses for Capital Transit, grant funding provided by Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and by the Equipment Replacement Reserves Fund balance.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate $2,148,195 for the replacement of three buses, four caravan vehicles, and three electric support vehicles for Capital Transit. Grant funding in the amount of $1,718,000 $1,556 is provided by federal funds through the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and the local match requirement of $429,639 funded from the Equipment Replacement Reserve Fund balance. This funding will replace three 35-foot New Flyer buses purchased in fiscal year 06, which have each provided their useful service life of 12 years of service and 500,000 miles. Funds are from the Federal Transit Administration and come through the State of Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The replacement of these buses is in the Capital Transit 2014 Transit Development Plan and adopted by the Statewide Transportation Improvement Plan under FTA Section 5339 monies available for capital expenses. It is planned to replace these three buses from our current contract with Gillig LLC. Public Works and Facilities Committee reviewed this appropriation ordinance at its November 20th, 2017 meeting and recommended forwarding it to the Assembly for approval. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything further, but from what I've read, and I...
Mr. Mitchell, if you state your name and address, please.
Yes, Duff Mitchell, 3274 Pioneer, Juneau, Alaska. I wasn't going to say anything further, but what I've read from other communities is the maintenance is quite a bit lower. My Leaf is rated for 500,000 miles before it needs major maintenance. Tesla's rated for 1,000,000. Electric buses have less working parts. My Leaf in 4 years has only had windshield wipers and brakes, period. Electric buses, and why other communities are purchasing them is because that life cycle cost is radically lower. It's several $100,000, which all studies indicate, from diesel, and it's still even significantly lower in the full 12-year cycle operating costs for natural gas. So electric buses today are already competing very handsomely against diesel. It keeps getting better. It's the price of diesel, but our electric buses are going down, and the operating costs for the communities that are purchasing these is they're saving money. So with that, I just would like to ask, you know, that there be some window of opportunity to keep electric bus opportunity and an on-ramp alive between now and 2021. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Mitchell? Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Is there a discussion? Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2017-06T and ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I am concerned that 2021 is the next possible window. Assembly terms don't even go that long. And the pace of technology and the pace of change in this arena is pretty impressive. If this ordinance, as I understood it, is talking about not buses for purchase this year, but the buses for purchase in the next fiscal year, is there opportunity to revise what we do with? I'm not particularly interested in turning away the money, but is there interest in opportunity to change what we do with the money when it comes to the buses? I mean, do we have an opportunity before 2021 when, you know, the S-curve of change is bending toward electric vehicles awfully fast?
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, so similarly with the one electric bus that we have coming, if there are grant openings with FTA that would provide the additional capital cost, I'm assuming we could go through the same process that we did. So as Mr. Foster noted, the Low-No grant was about half the cost of the electric bus, and we repurposed some of the cost of the original grant. So that would be pending FTA creating a new grant program that we would qualify for. When they put their grant programs out, they target different size cities, so sometimes they are, we are technically a rural transit system. So often when they are appropriating or creating grant programs, they're targeting the urban areas. And so we don't qualify to even be able to apply for all of the FTA opportunities. But that's a long-winded way of saying, yes, we can be on the lookout for that, but at some point we will have a grant in our hand from FTA, and FTA will be looking to us to expend and obligate that grant and get in the queue to purchase buses. Alternatively, I suppose we could provide the local match, but as you can see, that's a big lift, about an additional $400,000 per bus. So those are the kinds of options that we have.
Ms. Fladyshevsky.
And it's additional $400,000 per bus, but if you, how long does it take you to pay less diesel and buy no diesel, buy electricity and do less maintenance? When do you make that money back? I mean, it seems like we should be further along in knowing the answer to that. I'm disappointing that we're not sure yet.
Ends that discussion. Any further discussion or comments?
Just I appreciate the caution, but this isn't deciding whether to buy a flip phone or a smartphone in 2007. This is deciding whether to buy a flip phone or a smartphone in 2011. You know, with a 4-year window. It's by 2015, you'd look back at that thing and go, why did I buy that? I can't support, I mean, reluctantly I didn't object to the last one, but I just can't support locking in next year's buses on diesel again, and not opening the window to 2011. There has to be 2021.
Yeah, we don't want to go back to 2011. Here we have a motion on the floor, and there is objection. Is there any other discussion? Mr. Edwardson.
What would be the impacts to CBJ if this weren't to pass tonight?
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, so the... You know, obviously, this second set of buses will be coming online a little bit later, but, you know, we literally run our buses into the ground. So, you know, by the time they get to 500,000 miles, the mechanics are doing things like replacing the floors, all the major engine components. So if we don't appropriate this grant and we don't get new buses coming to replace those old buses, and we lose the grant opportunity. We could be having mechanics maintaining buses into the 600,000-800,000 miles or something like that. So we do have a fleet of about 18, and we do put about 50,000 miles a year on a bus. And we have our fleet is larger than the number of buses that's on the road at any one time because of our location and from time to time difficulty of obtaining parts. We do have a few spares. So my guess we would be doing a lot of work on old buses.
Thank you.
Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have a question for the manager, and that is with regard to the grant that we have for the one electric bus. Did that grant take into consideration our current fleet, the number of buses in the fleet, whether or not it was adequately supported by the number of buses we have? And, you know, of course, we can't see into the future too much, but by accepting this grant and replacing the buses that we have now, will that preclude us from future grants to bring on electric buses, should one become available?
So I'm going to look at Mr. Foster. So bringing on the electric bus, I believe, keeps our fleet level at 18 buses. So it supplants one of the diesel buses. Your, Could you ask the follow-up question again,
yes,
please?
Yes, the criteria for the electric bus grant that we have now, did that take into consideration our size of our fleet, or was it regardless of the size of our fleet that we would get that grant? How was that grant awarded?
Well, I'm going to try, and Mr. Foster can look. So the first time the grant opportunity came around, we had a very spirited effort from the community. We had some significant volunteer effort from the Sustainability Commission and from a private sector engineer who spent a lot of time working on the grant application. We weren't successful. It was very competitive. We asked for feedback on why we didn't score high enough, and we persisted and applied again. And as Mr. Foster noted, there were 28 or so communities that were successful. My take is that the manufacturing capacity of electric buses is what it is in the country, and I think FTA recognizes the technology is good and developing and is popular. But I think there's, a lot of interest nationwide. I don't think this discussion really is that different from other communities. But at the end of the day, we have an old fleet, and we have an opportunity to replace the old fleet with new buses. It's my recommendation that we upgrade our fleet and take that grant opportunity.
All right, Ms. Kladyszewski.
So this grant must be used to buy diesel buses. It's not just to buy a bus of whatever kind we like. Are there any, what exactly are the requirements? Do you have to buy a certain sort of bus? Instead of buying three diesel buses, can we buy two electric buses? I mean, what exactly are we agreeing to for this grant?
We'll bring Mr. Foster up, and I'll just give a little bit of a preamble. So, in order to keep our eligibility for FTA funding, and we get some operational funds as well as the bus grants and other from time to time equipment grants, we have to comply with a whole lot of FTA regulations and audits, and they periodically come up. And they look at our maintenance system, and they verify that we're maintaining on proper schedules, and they agree that our fleet is appropriately sized, and a whole host of other things. So now, as for what the grants can be used for, I'll hand that off to Mr. Foster if he has more detailed information.
Ed Foster, live at 9450 Delray Road. The grant money we have, we ask for it to replace the existing buses we have with like vehicles. We could request grant money to replace our diesel vehicles with electric vehicles instead of asking for $1.2 million, be asking for $2.4 million. But that's not what we did. We ask FTA for grant money to replace the vehicles we have with 35-foot low-floor diesel buses. And that's what we were granted. We could probably go back and get permission to use that money for something different, but you're only going to get half of what you ask for. And right now I have three buses that have over 600,000 miles on them, been on the road for 14 years, and I have mechanics that are working their butts off to keep them on the road. And I got four more that I'm trying to replace next year that are right on their heels, over 500,000 miles, and have been on the road over 12 years. And the life cycle for one of those diesel buses is 12 years, 500,000 miles. And that's seven buses of our fleet that are vulnerable. And vulnerable meaning at any time you could be getting calls from the public saying, why isn't these buses here to pick me up? And it could happen. So I understand the desire to go to electric buses, but we have a fleet that needs to be replaced, and I need to get this fleet upgraded. And the next time we ask for grant money, we should ask for enough grant money to replace them with electric vehicles if that's the way we want to go. But I don't think it's an intelligent move to go there without knowing electric buses is going to meet our needs. And we don't know that yet. We're getting an electric bus. We'll have it next year, and we'll be able to run it through the cycles and tell. Most likely it will. But I feel it's my responsibility to make sure you understand that electric buses haven't been proven here yet. And I wouldn't place my reputation on them doing what we need them to do until I see it. But we can go back and get permission to use that money for electric buses. I'm sure we can. But we're only going to get half of what we need.
Mr. Gale and Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate that. The clarification of the answer to Mr. Edwardson's question, that's a much clearer answer than we previously had. Thank you.
Mr. Gregory.
Thank you for the feedback and the information. So on several occasions, you've mentioned that we'll only get half of what we need. And you said we could also go back and ask for more. What is our time frame on this grant? Do we have to make this decision tonight? Can we go back and ask for more and see if we can actually get what we need?
We can't ask for more until next year. We can only put in a request during the grant application window every year. Okay. So it'll be next fall before we know if we get any more money. And another critical piece of getting that low and the low no emission grant that we got for the electric bus is a different grant than the money we got for to replace the diesel vehicles. But to get that money, one of the critical pieces was to demonstrate a need. And the way we demonstrated the need was that we have vehicles that are at the end of their life cycle. And until 2021, that's why I said 2021, that's when we will have more vehicles at the end of their life cycle. Not saying we can't apply for FTA grant money between now and 2021, but the state DOT has a bucket of money that they have to spread out across all the rural transit systems, and it just depends on how critical our need is versus other communities, whether we get it or not. They've been very supportive of us.
Okay, further questions from the Assembly? Ms. Vladishevsky.
To follow up on Mr. Gregory's question, you talked about half of what we need. Are you just anticipating you won't get enough? What do you mean by we'll get half of what we need?
I say that because we have the grant money we have right now will buy us the vehicles that we need to replace. If we replace them with electric, if we get permission to replace them with electric buses instead of diesel, we're only going to get half the buses that we need, because they cost twice as much.
Right, and then if we buy three new buses, we're not going to be competitive in the grants until 2021, because we have no more buses that are at the end of their life cycle. You said we could apply, but it will be difficult for us to get that money because we will have already bought three buses and then three more buses, and we won't have old enough buses until 2021.
Yes, that's
correct. So this is sort of the last opportunity before 2021 to buy some electric vehicles.
That's correct.
All right. We have a motion before you. We have objection. Clerk, would please call the roll. Well, restate the motion. And
to adopt Ordinance 2017-06-T.
And would you call the roll, please?
Yep. Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. Decker?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right. Ordinance 2017-06-U. Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance transferring $55,449 of unexpended FY17 marine passenger fees from the general fund to the open space waterfront land acquisition capital improvement project.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would transfer $55,449 of unexpended marine passenger fee revenues budgeted for specific purposes in fiscal year 17 and not expended by the fiscal year end to the open space waterfront land acquisition CIP. This transfer is consistent with the Assembly's direction on the disposition of unexpended MPF funds. The amounts below are a result of monies appropriated from marine passenger fee fund for specific purposes but were not fully expended by the end of fiscal year 17. Franklin Dock Enterprises, $20,285. Downtown Business Association, $1,738. Capital City Fire Rescue, $33,426. For accounting purposes, the funds will first be refunded to the Marine Passenger Fee Fund and then be transferred to the Open Space Waterfront Land Acquisition CIP. Prior to this appropriation, the CIP has approximately $1.85 million in the fund. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there any public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we adopt Ordinance 2017-06-U and ask for unanimous consent.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion carries. Ordinance 2017-06-V. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $1,334,074 to begin reconstruction of Project Playground Rebuild Capital Improvement Project, funding provided by a partial insurance settlement from Lexington Insurance Company.
Mr. Manager.
This appropriation will create a new CIP to design and construct a new playground. This is the initial property insurance reimbursement and represents the total loss value of our insurance claim from the April fire. There are no requirements by the insurance company for how these funds may be spent. Since our property insurance policy covers replacement costs, CBJ is also eligible for additional insurance funds if needed as the project progresses. Additional funds may be reimbursed by our insurance company for reconstruction of like kind and quality to the original playground facility. CBJ Risk Management is working closely with engineering, parks, and recreation staff to ensure that we make most of our available insurance coverage. Public Works and Facilities Committee forwarded this request to the full assembly at its October 23, 2017 meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there any public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Welton.
I move that we adopt Ordinance 2017-06-V and ask for unanimous consent.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion is carried. Ordinance 2017-06-W.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $15,500 as funding for the Local Emergency Planning Committee, grant funding provided by the State of Alaska, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance appropriates $15,500 from the Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, under the fiscal year 2018 Local Emergency Planning Committee grant awarded to the CBJ. These funds are provided to reimburse the City and Borough of Juneau for Juneau LEPC program implementation expenses incurred in direct support of the goals and activities of this grant. Funding supports payroll benefits, increasing community awareness, involvement, and planning for chemical and all hazards events through outreach supplies, media campaigns, training, and event room rentals to help our community prepare for and mitigate through planning and preparedness for potential events. There is no match requirement for this grant. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify?
Ricky Joe Kennedy, formerly of Kodiak Island, now here in Juneau. And I'm just a little bit concerned with the Department of Veterans Affairs again, wanting to give us money for chemical fallouts. Remember, I come from an island where we had a rocket launch put on us, and we were duped. We were told it was going to be commercial and ended up being a missile defense site. That's why I'm back in Juneau. But I'm a little leery when they start saying, for chemical alerts and everything. I just want everybody to stay alert and stay astute of what's going on with some of this money being appropriated through the Veterans Affairs. It's called go-through money, go around. I mean, just 2 months prior to 9/11, we had that huge meeting in Kodiak when they announced we were really a missile defense site, and they told us, you know, well, you better get ready. We're going to have all this emergency planning and all this. And then 2 months later, we did have 9/11. But just be aware of some of this funding. When they're offering you money and they're saying be aware for some chemical fallout, I don't like it. Just stay astute to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2017-06-W, and I'd ask for unanimous consent.
Just a question.
Mr. Keel.
Just for the purpose of a question, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Manager, it's been some time since I was liaison to the LEPC. The hazards I remember in the chemical hazards I remember had to do with, I think, refrigerants at the fish plants and fuel tank depots and
swimming pools.
Chlorine in swimming pools and water treatment. Are there other chemical hazards we're monitoring through the LEPC, through our emergency manager?
Mr. Mayor, I believe Mr. Keel's memory is correct. So our biggest exposure for a chemical hazard event really would be a fuel spill or refrigerants at the fish processing plants. We have moved away from chlorine gas in our water treatment, so we do have brine disinfection systems, so we've removed that exposure to the community. So while we do have some exposure for chemical events, we are fortunate in the suite of chemicals that are used in Juneau for industrial processes. Are relatively limited compared to most communities.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. All right, we have a motion and unanimous consent has been requested. Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the motion has carried. We're going to take a 5-minute break before we go on to the rest of the agenda, so please break. Be back here at 8:25. That's a real short break.
We're live and we're local, KTOO Juneau at 104.3. We are currently listening to the CBJ Assembly meeting live broadcast, and a quick look at the weather. Tonight, rain showers before midnight, then slight chance of snow showers between midnight and 3 a.m., low around 32. Tomorrow, scattered rain and snow showers, cloudy with a high near 34. Wednesday, rain, high near 38, and Thursday, rain and snow, high near 35. Friday, snow likely, then rain and snow likely between 9 and 3 p.m., and a chance of snow after 3 p.m. The Assembly has gone on a 5-minute break. We'll be back in about 5 minutes, and we'll listen to some music.
LGBT Americans agree that discrimination is still a problem, but younger and older generations don't always agree about where the change has to start.
I can't change people who are so deeply rooted in their values, so the only thing I can do is to focus on policy and legislation.
Which hurts more, individual prejudice or bias in the law? A look at how the debate plays out for transgender Americans on the next morning edition.
Listen tomorrow at 4 a.m. on KTOO Juno 104.3.
Be part of our studio audience for the next TV recording of Writer's Showcase, Thursday, November 30th at 7 p.m. Reading work by Alaska writers Clint Farr, Mary Kudinoff, and Heather Lindy, local actors Christina Apathy, Donnie Gott, and Elizabeth Pysel Davis take us skating on thin ice in Haines, a springtime beach walk in Anchorage, to a pecan harvest in Georgia. That's Writer's Showcase, Thursday, November 30th at 7 p.m. right here at KTOO. Admission is free.
No unfinished business.
New business?
Mr. Mayor, we have a proposed supplemental agreement with F&W Construction for the Juneau International Airport Snow Removal Equipment Building Phase 1B. The airport is requesting approval of a supplemental agreement with F&W Construction for Phase 1B of the Snow Removal Equipment Building. Phase 1A had a contract amount of $13.5 million, primarily funded by FAA. Phase 1B would add vehicle wash bay and maintenance area, which are not eligible for FAA funding. They would be funding from existing sales tax funding and a state legislative grant. The Airport Board and Public Works and Facilities Committee have concurred with the public interest finding for a supplemental agreement with F&W Construction for Phase 1B of the Shrub. The Airport Board approved its action at its November 14, 2017 meeting. Public Works and Facilities Committee approved this action at its November 20th, 2017 meeting, and the amount of the supplemental agreement would be not to exceed $2.6 million. I recommend that you approve this supplemental agreement.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move approval of the supplemental agreement as described by the manager and ask unanimous consent.
Mr. Edwardson.
Could I object just to ask a question?
Certainly.
I went through the documents, and it might be written in there somewhere, but what is, how much is going to be used out of the sales tax? How much is going to be granted by the state?
Mr. Mayor, I'd bring up Ms. Watto for the exact apportionment of the fund sources.
Which would mean it would be worthwhile for you to have state here. If you'd identify yourself, please.
Thank you. Patty Watto, Airport Manager. So the funds used for the supplemental agreement are not sales tax dollars. Well, they're older sales tax dollars from 2012, and then roughly $300,000-ish of that, and then the remaining is from the legislative special legislative grant.
How much? I'm sorry, follow-up.
Mr. Edwardson?
How much from the legislative grant?
We have roughly $2.3 million remaining of that.
Okay, thank you. I remove my objection.
Okay. The question has been called. The motion was put forth. Hearing no objection and seeing no objection, the motion is carried. Any more new business, Mr. Manager?
No new business. Thank you.
Staff reports, Mr. Manager.
No staff report. Thank you.
Assembly reports. Starting with the mayor, last Friday was the Christmas tree lighting in Douglas. This Friday is Gallery Walk downtown and in the valley. And Sunday the 10th is the U.S. Coast Guard Chief Petty Officer Dinner for Seniors. I believe it starts right around 4 o'clock for those that would like to attend. That's your mayor's report. Committee and liaison reports. We'll start with Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I attended an LEPC meeting on the 8th. That was at noon. Some of the highlights are the National Guard gave a really good presentation of their capabilities for search and rescue using their helicopters. There was discussion about, let me see, flu vaccines, and I get excited by flu vaccines simply because they were talking about how quickly they could cycle 300 people through, and it sounded like it went really well. Let me see. And they had a discussion about the warming center and the delay. And, well, not necessarily the delay, but the new opening date. And that was about it for that. There was also a Commission on Sustainability meeting that night. However, it conflicted with a finance meeting. And, see, Docks and Harbors had a meeting I couldn't attend. There was an AML.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the Eagle Crest Board has not met since we last met. They'll be meeting the first Thursday of December. I encourage you to show up and hear what's going on up at Eagle Crest. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee met on Tuesday, November the 7th at 6 p.m. here in the chambers. We received a report from Michelle Elfers in regards to Chicken Yard Park and Capitol Park. There appear to be some wall issues, and they're looking into adding a hose bib in Chicken Yard Park so people can water their community gardens. Moving on, out at Adair Kennedy, they're working on a master plan for that area. They're currently working with Jensen Yorba Lot and looking at moving the restroom and the structure, and also looking to develop a cost estimate to see how much more money they need for that project. At Overstreet Park, they are in phase three of the project. They are currently working on the plaza, the slab, and the bathrooms. They anticipate that by May 31st that the park should be functional and open for the season. There needs to be a relocation of the trail for the Brotherhood Bridge Trail. There are sections that need paving improvements of that trail, as well as some drainage that needs to be dealt with. They are going to be looking at the whole trail, and they'll have additional information for us this winter. Out at Rotary Park, they are finalizing the construction documents with Corvus Design to have a bid awarded by January or February, and it looks like they're looking at installing playground equipment. The project should be done and open by July. The Arboretum Park is under construction. Southeast Earth Movers has been working on that area this fall. They are now in winter shutdown, but in early spring they will complete their work, and the Arboretum should be open for public use by May 15th. We heard a little bit about Project Playground tonight. Moving on here. There was some talk about the pickets out at the playground that burned, and will the pickets be going back out to be replaced? Was that part of the insurance? So there was a lot of discussion that revolved around the pickets. Moving on, we heard from Mr. Duncan. He talked about the Eagle Valley Center and when Saga turned the facility over to CBJ, that CBJ is looking at working with SAIL and putting together a five-year lease for the Eagle Valley Center. And they talked a little bit about what a ropes course is out there. I can go on and on, but I think that is it for my report tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gregory. Ms. Weldon. Which one is this?
So I forgot. There is a very special committee that I am a part of, and would like to talk a little bit about that if we may back the bus up just a little bit, please. So the Mining Committee met on Monday, November the 20th. How can we forget this committee? It's what everybody's been waiting for. And we would like to recommend the following additional committee members. From the Planning Commission, the committee puts forth the names of Ben Height and Paul Volkers to represent the Planning Commission. From the members of the public, we put forward the names of Kyle Moselle and Roman Montica to represent the public. And, would like to ask for unanimous consent from the Assembly for those new members.
Is there any objection to those nominations?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Jones.
Not an objection to the nomination specifically, and I did not attend the meeting because the public notice said that we were going into executive session, and so I didn't want to go. But at the previous meeting I did attend, there was a discussion about whether these additional members would have a vote on the committee or whether the vote would still just be with the three members of the Assembly, and I was wondering if that discussion had taken place and what was the final result. I would just like to know if these four members are going to have full voting rights on the committee or not. Thank you.
I think that will be discussed in the next. Right now all we're looking at are the nominations, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Then I will object to the nominations without knowing whether or not I'm nominating people to be full members of a committee of the Assembly with voting powers, and not knowing that, I am going to be a no vote. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion on the nominations? Mr. Edwardson.
I guess I agree with Mr. Jones in that I guess I don't know what I'm voting on if they're not going to be voting members, then I guess I'm not clear on what the purpose of having that many people on the committee is if their voice isn't going to be heard or recorded. So I'll be a no vote also.
Mr. Gregory.
Mr. Mayor. Actually, maybe this is a question for the city attorney, is that would it be appropriate for the mining subcommittee members who are all here today to have a discussion as to whether or not these members will be voting or not voting, or should we hold off for a committee meeting to have that discussion?
Mr. Gregory, do you mean right now?
Yes, right this very moment.
You mean go on to recess and discuss? Or do you want to just to start the discussion now?
Either way, if we were to do either of those, being that this meeting hasn't been publicly noticed.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, you can discuss it right now. That's fine. The assembly can decide as a whole, too, whether or not to have the members being, the proposed members be voting or not.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Gregory.
May we have that discussion?
Okay. Certainly.
Okay. So the committee has discussed whether or not these members should be voting or not voting members. And considering that this mining subcommittee is only making a recommendation to the full assembly, I would like to talk to my mining committee members and ask their thoughts on the matter. Here for discussion.
Ms. Franceschi.
So we did have this discussion briefly on the November 9th meeting when we met to talk about how we are going to pick members. We had that discussion. We have a split thought on the committee. Some other members thought the members should not be voting, and I think they should. So we left it open. My memory is that we were just going to, the assembly was going to make that decision. So we would have that discussion as an assembly. So now I'm a tiny bit confused whether there was a motion on the table about the members, and then I thought we would later discuss the voting of those members. If we want to flip that, either way is okay with me, but I just need to be clear which we're doing. Are we talking about the voting? Are we talking about the motion on the table as the members? So
I think we should,
if we want to flip that,
I think we should maybe talk about the voting so that the full assembly can talk about the members, because we have some members that are objecting if it's a non-voting committee.
Okay. So then are we talking about the voting?
Mr. Gregory, then you're putting the nominations on hold and talking about the voting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That way our colleagues on the assembly can have a little bit more insight as they go to vote on these members.
All right. Any further discussion from the...
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
If we're going to move the voting forward, then I would make a motion that we would make the appointments of additional members to the mining subcommittee, and that they would have the same voting rights as any assembly member and any other appointment that the assembly makes to committees of this body.
Are you through with your discussion?
Just to be clear, Mr. Gregory's motion is off the table, and now Mr. Jones' motion is on the table?
Yes.
Okay. So then I would speak in favor of the motion. That's what makes sure. But I just think that, as I've said before, that this is an important task. It would be best happen. It would be best occurred by the full assembly. That's not going to happen. So instead of 9 members, we would be having 7 members talking, discussing input with all of their input into the discussions. It seems strange to me to have a committee that really is a 3-member committee with 4 members that would just advise. I don't know of any other committee that we've had that has worked that way. Certainly the marijuana committee that I was on didn't work that way. The homeless committee didn't work that way. It just seems like a respectful, a full discussion should occur with all 7 members. And the last mining committee I was on, We didn't vote very often, to tell you the truth, not that I recall. It was a, and I would hope that this committee would work the same way, largely consensus, or at least five people kind of think that and two people don't object. That's sort of how you sort of move things forward. You don't all have to completely agree. You just have to not disagree. And I hope that's the way this committee would work, and I would like to hear from all seven voices, because it's a complicated subject. And it needs full engagement of all those people. So I would vote for this motion to appoint the four people and have them be full participants in the committee. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion? Ms. Weldon.
So my thoughts on this is a little bit different than Mrs. Gladyshef sees. I see this as a subcommittee that has pretty much a pretty straight, clear line that all we're looking at is to see if this is the ordinance is duplicative, that's a tough word for me, or not. I mean, so that's where I came up with the first thing, that I think just the three assembly members should be have voting rights, and the other ones should be advisors, because reading through these ordinances and the regulations, that's what I need, is I need advice on these regulations. And so I would say I would object, just because I think it should be just the three assembly members voting. And although we could probably do it by consensus too, but seven is just a bit pretty bulky number, is what I'm looking at. So,
so my thoughts on the matter,
Mr. Gregory.
Thank you. My thoughts on the matter is, you know, just replaying the different committees that have come through CBJ and how that worked. You know, we both sat on the Homeless Cook Committee, and that was done by consensus, and it seemed to have worked out fairly well, I think. And it sounds like the historical pattern has been that it's done by consensus with committee work, and ultimately the final vote is going to come up to this assembly here to decide on. And so I see no reason to limit anybody else's voting abilities on the committee, being that it's going to come back here for a vote anyway. So I think I can support Mr. Jones' motion.
Further discussion? Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree with Mr. Gregory. I think that, unlike the homeless issue, which in my opinion, everyone knew we had to resolve the homeless issue. So you were going to get consensus on almost everything. Maybe not the exact amount of money or whatever, but basically the concept of doing something for the homeless was going to be easy to get a consensus. Unlike this one. I'm not sure this will be easy to get a consensus if you do all seven. And to try to do consensus, to me, seems like you would be talking and you want to talk, and then maybe Mr. Gregory would say, do we have agreement with that? And then someone would say, no, I don't agree. And if that consists of being a vote, then you are getting into sort of a messy situation. Be better if you, I think it's going to be absolutely, I believe all the people that you have on that committee will talk. They will want to put in their input. They will want to say what they feel. But ultimately, the assembly is responsible for what could be a contentious subject in the community, be very expensive, and I think that that is a decision for the assembly to make, and I would like to hear the assembly recommendation from the assembly committee after you've taken in the input of the people that are there, and I'm sure you're going to know how they would have voted, but I don't think that it's a good idea to make it a voting committee except for the three assembly members. That's all.
Yep. Mr. Edwards.
I support Mr. Jones' motion, and the reason is it is a committee. If three people have votes, clearly there's going to be votes, and there's no reason for not all seven, or no reason that all seven shouldn't vote. They're going to be reach a majority, and then there's going to be a recommendation, and the assembly will do its work when it gets the recommendation from the subcommittee. But if the people on the committee aren't equals, I don't know how it is that everybody's voices can be heard equally. I have no problem with the candidates that are proposed. I do support Mr. Jones's idea of accepting these candidates as full voting members. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Further discussion? If there is objection, Mr. Jones, motion. And the clerk will please restate the motion.
To have all members of the Assembly Mining Committee as appointed have full voting rights. Is that correct?
That's correct.
No?
What?
I thought the motion was to appoint the four and have them be voting.
No.
That's where
we switched it.
Oh, I thought it was all in one. Okay. Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones?
Motion by Jones to make the appointment of the additional members have full voting rights on the committee.
That's correct. I did not say that appoint the four. I wanted to get the question of voting first.
Okay.
Mr. Dan Curvis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question for the committee chair then. Right now, well, previously, four names were submitted. I would assume, and I know what they say about that, but we're looking at four names again in a few minutes from now. So the makeup of the committee would be three assembly members and four non-assembly members, correct?
Yes.
That's the plan? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. The motion has been restated. Will you please call the roll? Mm-hmm.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Weldon?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
No.
Motion carries 5-4.
All right. Will you bring the nominations forward, please?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The nominations for the Mining Committee, there are two members from the Planning Commission who would be Ben Height and Paul Volkers. Representing the members of the public would be Kyle Mozell and Roman Montica.
Okay. Is there objection to the nominations? Mr. Ned Kervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I object. Can I speak to my objection?
You may.
It's the number. Thank you. I don't think you should have more non-assembly members and assembly members on that committee, and the way it's currently structured, the assembly's in the minority just based on the numbers, and I think that's a little backwards. Thank you.
Further discussion? Skrodyszewski.
I'll just speak briefly. I think seven is a good number. It's not too big. Nine is big. I think it's a good number of people to work on it. And ultimately, it will be the Assembly's decision. And, you know, we will get to review as much or as, you know, as much as we want. So I think seven is a good number, basically. Thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll just speak briefly to the expertise and the diligence of the people on the committee, some of whom I have a lot of disagreements with, but all four of those names are hardworking people who I think are, who I know are dedicated to our community. I wouldn't, certainly wouldn't say that they're a slant in one direction or another. I think they will bring a lot of expertise and a lot of hard work. So I look forward to whatever it is this fully constituted committee brings us, with the understanding, as others have said, that ultimate accountability lies at this table. So thank you.
Okay, we have a slate of nominees. There is objection.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mr. Everson?
Yes.
Ms. Bartoszewski?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
No.
Motion carries 7-2.
All right. Your
are you done yet?
Committee that you forgot about? I think we are.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory. Thank you for the
You're
work.
Welcome.
Ms. Weldon.
For the Planning Commission, they have not had a meeting since our last meeting, and their next meeting is actually tomorrow, the 28th, at 7 p.m. at the Assembly Chambers. And for the Aquatics Board, they're currently working on what to do upon their sunset date in May. And they gave us a memo at the COW with their options of what, several options of what to do at their sunset date. And they're also trying to work on pool covers, and they're still waiting on more specifics on more options from the city. And their next meeting is tomorrow at 4 p.m. at room 224 upstairs. And that's it.
Thank you, Ms. Weldon. Ms. Bratishevsky.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met this evening, and we talked about four separate boards. And we have some recommendations for the Douglas Advisory Board. The committee recommends the reappointment of Marchetta Moulton and Joyce Vick for terms expiring September 30th, 2020.
Okay. Is there objection? Hearing none. Nominations are confirmed.
Thank you. The committee also recommends appointments to the Building Code Advisory Committee for terms expiring 11/30/2020, the names of Alan Wilson and Heidi Ceruto, excuse me.
Are there any objections to the nominations? Nominations are confirmed.
And to the Building Code Board of Appeals, the nominations of Michael Story and Daryl Weatherall for term expiring 8/31/2020, and Heidi Ceruto, again, for a term expiring 8/31/2019.
Are there any objections to the nominations? Nominations are confirmed.
And then for the reconstitution of the Juneau Commission on Aging, so these are all, the entire committee. Some of them will be for 1 year and others for 2 year terms, so they're staggered. So for 1 year terms expiring December 31, 2018 would be Katrina Lee, Joanne Flora, Andy Hughes, and Carol Trebian. And for two-year terms expiring on 2019, Emily Kane, Susan Warner, Paul Douglas, and Eileen Hosey.
Okay. Are there any objections? Mr. Gregory, question?
Just for a question. Oh. I feel like we're missing one
just
name.
Excuse me. Thank you very much, Mr. Gregory Tiskett Sessler for a two-year term.
Okay. Are there any objections to those
thank you very much.
Nominations? Nominations are confirmed.
Thank you. That's it for the Human Resources Committee. The Bartlett Hospital Board has not met since we last met, but the Affordable Housing Commission met. They talked about the Builders Forum, CDE's organizing, which is in January 18th, and their participation there, the CBJ Housing Forum. They talked about possibly doing a survey, but what they decided to do was to present their current agenda and be there for information. They talked generally about the Affordable Housing Fund uses, not very specifically, but generally believe that the funds should be used to target needs on an individual basis rather than large developments. And they heard the housing officer report many of the things we've already heard about the warming shelter in the homeless coordinator position. So that's my report, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Public Works and Facilities Committee, last met, we dealt with majority of the items over the last couple of meetings. During this meeting, we did review a proposed schedule of the distribution of the 1% sales tax that was voted on at the October election, and we referred that schedule to the Finance Committee. We also received a letter from the Planning Commission on the FY19 CIP issues. We will hang on to that as we get into our discussion in January over the FY19 CIPs before it goes to the Finance Committee. Our next meeting is December 4th. The Downtown Business Association's last meeting was on the 7th of November. They talked about a lot of issues, some of which have come and gone, the public market, some of the promotions downtown, and getting ready for a gallery walk. One interesting presentation was a presentation from a Mr. Kim Wold with Integra Realty Resources from Seattle. And he was there with the owner of Integra Realty Resources from Seattle. They gave a presentation similar to, not quite identical, to the presentation made by the real estate manager for the Morris Group. They said that they were in the employ of the Morris Group, and they were talking about the Archipelago project. They had more drawings, slightly different interpretation of how they got where they went. I subsequently met with Ducks and Harbors. They knew these individuals. They were surprised that they were in town because they didn't know they were in town. And it just raised some other concerns that I had on the project that's going forward. And hopefully the Docks and Harbors meeting on November 30th will be well attended by the public to review. The next meeting of the DBA is December 12th. I will not be there, so if anybody wants to attend, please feel free. It's a great group of folk. On the school board, their meeting was November 14th, and I was in Anchorage for the Marijuana Control Board and the AML. I did ask for a PDF file of their packet, which turned out to be 316 pages long. I haven't quite read it all yet. In addition, I also received a separate 130-page report on student achievement that was also discussed at the meeting I did not attend. In my reading, interesting point to make the assembly aware of, in FY18, they projected an enrollment of 4,801 students. The actual enrollment reported to the Department of Education was 4,678.81. I think that has to do with special eds and the way you count kids, you end up with partial kids. So that's 122.19 students less than their projections. Their actual in FY17 was 4,783.69. So their actual in 18 was 104.88 less than FY17. Overall, that reduction will be a reduction in their budget of funding of $790,408, of which $148,100 is part of our CBA funding to our CBJ funding to the cap. So I'm assuming that during our discussions and finance come next year, Mr. Bartholomew will be talking about that. I'm sure that the school district will have some desire to possibly have us use that money some other way, but that's future down the road. They have had some discussions. The school board's next meeting is December 12th, and I will not be there, but I will get a PDF file, and I will again try to read on through. I did make a comment to the chairman, president of the school board, that how can a person struggling with a job and kids in school keep up with a school board that has an impact on what happens to their kid when there's a 500-page packet for a single board meeting. But anyway, that's just another comment. Presiding officers, if I might, the Seventh-day Adventist appeal, both parties have asked for a delay. They are hoping to find a solution. So the meeting that was hearing that was scheduled for January 22nd has been rescheduled to March 5th at 5 o'clock. So you can take the Seventh-day Adventist appeal off your calendars for January 22nd and put it on your calendars for March 5th. And that's it, unless the mayor wants to deal with the salary subcommittee now or wait for later.
No, we'll do that in executive session.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Alaska Municipal League had its annual conference, week for last in Anchorage. A number of you were there, and I know that you had the opportunity to attend the Conference of Mayors. Municipal attorney and the clerks also have leadership roles within their organizations and participated in those statewide meetings. I thought it was an excellent conference this year, and a number of important issues raised, discussed, a couple of resolutions with particular interest to Juneau, although being the league, they're statewide issues, and I will get the entire assembly the list of resolutions that passed at our business meeting. I know that not everyone was able to attend for the final voting there, so I'll let you all know how those turned out. The University of Alaska Southeast Campus Council meets next week, has not met since our last assembly meeting. The Finance Committee last met November 8th, and at that meeting there was a great deal of discussion of the potential purchase and transfer of the electric utility. We reviewed the report of the financial analyst whom we had contracted to look at that issue. And I think there was a lot of discussion on that and how we might or might not proceed. We got a major revenue update. The barbarians are not yet at the gates. And revenues are slightly above what was projected. We also, just to echo Mr. Gregory's report from the Parks and Rec group, heard an update on the Eagle Valley Center and how close that has come to meeting its operating costs each year. And so that was interesting and gratifying. Staff is doing remarkable work with the nonprofit out there. Our next finance meeting is, I believe, in 2 weeks' time. So I look forward to seeing you all again then. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gill. Ms. Becker.
That finance meeting on the 13th?
I think that's the one.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I'm noticing that most of the committees I'm on are trying to get the meetings all done before the winter break. So the airport next meeting is December 12th. I'm giving you the dates because I wasn't able to go or else they didn't have one since our last assembly. Chamber of Commerce, December 13th is the board meeting. They have meetings, public meetings every Thursday with good speakers. JADC, December 6th is the next meeting. Travel Juneau is this Thursday, 11:30, at November 30. The Alaska Committee, I don't remember what date it is. It's next month, though. The CBJ School District Working Group is meeting December 13th at 4:30. And then the committee that I'm chairing is lands. There are two major topics at the last lands meeting. One was to delete the Eagle Nest buffer code because we don't have the same requirements from the federal government for buffers for eagles. No one is watching out to see where eagle nests are. And so the decision was we could delete that. I'm going to assume it's going to come here. I haven't seen it yet, but it's going to come here. Juneau Youth Services, the cornerstone building that they lease from us, that's Back Loop Road and Egan Drive on that corner there. They're vacating their lease on the 31st of December. They're going to move to the Back Loop Road where they have the other facilities and just combine facilities. And that will come back to us in January for further discussion. We have to talk about what we would do with that land and that building because there are more than one building on that property. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Becker. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The committee of the whole met last week. I was unable to get back to attend, and our next meeting is scheduled for next Monday on the 4th. Also, if you will grab your calendars, or whatever you call them, PDAs, and they're all working on them right now. A special assembly meeting is going to be, Committee of the Whole meeting will be on December 19th, which is a Tuesday, and I apologize for this time. It is 2 to 3 p.m. That is a meeting for us to have a face-to-face with the Avista CEO, Scott Morris, and at the same time have a face-to-face with, if I'm saying his name correctly, Mayo Schmidt from Hydro One, the CEO as well. And that was a time that we could get them both into town at the same time, or they were both in town at the same time. And so I apologize for the inconvenient middle-of-the-day time, but I'm fairly certain everybody wants to at least get a chance to ask them some questions. 2 to 3 p.m. on Tuesday, the 19th of December. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. That brings us to assembly comments and questions. And everyone on the assembly is probably going, gosh, wonder what's going on at the retreat. And here's a agenda, and Mila, if you could send Lauren a copy of that.
Yes, I can. Thank you. Yeah. I think I could take a picture of it. I don't have it electronically.
All right. And basically, it is to go over our goals from last year and to bring forth any goals that the Assembly has that they would like to discuss at this particular retreat. So it begins at 8 at Bartlett, boardroom out there, and it will end by noon. That's the agenda. Are there any questions on that? All right. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, making breakfast that morning?
Earlier than I directed it.
Yeah, there is supposed to be something there, correct?
Can we choose the menu now?
Yeah. We will be fed. The second one was the a whole lot more serious, and that is the rape kit backlog. I am going to request that the Public Safety Committee delve into that issue and come back with the results on that. And that is chaired by the Deputy Mayor, Ned Kervis. And do you know when the next meeting is on that, Mr. Ned Kervis?
Mr. Mayor, we do not yet. We were going to have a presentation from somebody, and we're waiting for their availability. It might be next Tuesday or the Tuesday after that. So when does that make it, the 5th or the 12th? Yes. Thank you.
All right.
What time are your meetings? Sorry. Are they noon?
They are at noon.
Okay. Thank you.
But we do want to get that dealt with as quickly as possible. Okay. And then going in reverse order, Mr. Nankervis, Assembly comments and questions.
Mr. Mayor, I am glad to be alive, and I'm also glad that all of you are as well. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just also went to AML, as other people from our assembly. I want to thank Mr. Keel for arranging a very important evening meeting for us.
Okay. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll reassure Ms. Becker it was my pleasure, and wish her a very happy birthday as well.
Thank you.
I also was going to raise the issue of the rape kits. I'm not sure what whether you and I mean the same thing by make sure that the issue is dealt with, but I will make sure I attend the next Public Safety Committee meeting because I'm keenly interested in that and making sure as many of those kits get tested as possible, both from the backlog and going forward. That's an issue that the state I know addressed this last legislative session. It looks like we have an opportunity to address it as well. And then finally, I'd like to welcome Ms. Bowen and reassure her that whatever Mr. Nankervis meant about the comment, survival is not usually a concern at these meetings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Nothing tonight, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Ms. Fladyshevsky.
Happy birthday to Ms. Becker. I would sing to you later. later. Not on the radio.
I wanted to record that.
No.
Radio.
And I too am interested in the rape kit issue. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for giving that to that committee, and I look forward to understanding more about why that is, where all those are on that whole issue. So I have nothing else. Thank you.
Ms. Weldon?
I'm dying to spend my Saturday morning with all of you. It will be a lot of fun. And all I have is the West Valley Wolf Pack will be here starting Thursday, so if you want to go down and see some good hockey, it starts Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday morning, which I'll spend with you guys.
Preferably not dying. Okay. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have two questions, actually, and I'm sure that the manager can probably answer these for me. The first one is, I went on a run last night. It was a great run. Some of the best time for me to go out and run in the snow. However, one of the issues I did not like was that I had to run along Douglas Highway. And it was a little scary at some points because our sidewalks weren't clear. And it's my opinion that when we don't have clear sidewalks, people that don't have vehicles can't get to where they need to go safely if they do so by foot. But also it limits our ability to create a healthy community where people have the ability to recreate on our city streets and sidewalks. And I was curious about whose responsibility it is to clear the sidewalks. Because I would like to see those cleared after a snow so we can walk and we can run and do other things on the sidewalk and keep people out of the streets.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, so first off, Douglas Highway is owned and maintained by the state. So it's the Department of Transportation that would clear the road and the sidewalks as they're able. In city code, we require property owners to clear the sidewalks in front of their properties. Simply because we don't have the resources to clear all the sidewalks in the borough. On the city streets, which are generally the neighborhood roads, not the highways, not the arterials, with a few exceptions, we have a priority plowing system where we plow the main routes, the school bus routes, the school area. So there's kind of a tiered process. And in neighborhoods where we're able to, we plow snow to the center of the road, come back and pick it up and remove it. Some neighborhoods, particularly in older parts of town, we do plow onto sidewalks because there's nowhere else to put it. Sometimes storm drain locations play into that. It's a little bit neighborhood by neighborhood. But generally, homeowners and property owners are responsible to clear the sidewalk in front of their property. But we recognize that if the plow trucks are storing snow there, that they're probably not reasonably going to be able to do that.
So then the next question is regarding neighborhoods. And so I've lived in my house for, gosh, I think this is year five now. And it seems to me that it's a little unfair that I end up on the berm side of the road every single year. And I can tell you, I certainly love my neighbors on the other side of the street. I really do. They brought me cake and other things this last weekend. I love them. I don't want to upset that apple cart just yet. But what is the rationale for only leaving the berm on one side of the road? It seems like we should alternate that responsibility year by year. That way it's not unfairly left to be the burden of somebody that lives on one side of the street, not the other.
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, so in Mr. Gregory's scenario, I don't know the exact circumstances, but our street maintenance staff certainly could answer that question. And there's probably a rationale that has to do with drainage. It may be tradition. That may be true. I'm really not sure. But likely there's a rationale.
And then I've got a third question. And my third question is, as I'm driving around town, I notice that we have a series of light poles that are down. There's one that's been down by the boat harbor for quite some time, which is on along Egan, so I'm assuming that's a state issue. But also there are a number of streetlights out around town, and I'm just wondering who goes around to check those at this time of the year when we could really use that extra light to make sure that those things are working and reporting them to the appropriate resource, whether it be, you know, the city or the state or AELMP, to go out and fix those.
Mr. Mayor, so all of the city streetlights have a number on them, and if you call street maintenance, if a streetlight is out, call street maintenance and let them know. We contract with one of the electrical contractors to get them. So we don't, as a matter of course, drive around and check the streetlights. We've got thousands of them, and we rely on the public to let us know when they're out. And so if anybody finds any streetlight out, it's fine to call city street maintenance. Report the location, and if it's a DOT one, they can refer it over there as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory. Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also attended AML in one of the most valuable sessions. I'm not going to say one of the most enjoyable. I think it was the Matt Sue had a drug task force presentation made up of six people, I think four of them in long-term recovery. And the biggest lesson that I took out of that is that it helped them be basically client-focused or customer-focused. They actually knew what it was that addicted people went through, and they found the way to long-term recovery. So that was, like I said, probably one of the most valuable public market this weekend. Thank you for all of you who contributed to buying things and helping out organizations that do a lot of things for the community that it might actually cost the city a lot more to do themselves. Gary Gillette received Alaska's Municipal Employee of the Year here tonight, and I'd just like to say I'm very pleased that in my first couple months here I've seen so many people from CBJ receive awards from their peers around the state. So, and happy birthday, Ms. Becker.
That brings us to continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. Is there anyone in the chamber that wishes to address the assembly on a non-agenda item? Seeing none, we will be going into executive session for the attorney evaluation, and I think we should add to that the salary. So if someone would like to move that, please. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we recess into executive session to speak about subjects that the immediate knowledge of which could have an adverse effect on the finances of the public, and also that I don't think this will happen, have a tendency to prejudice the reputation or character of any person. Since we're doing an evaluation, I think that one kind of fits tonight, although I don't think that's the issue here. And I would ask for unanimous consent.
Any objection from the public that wishes to object or to testify? Seeing none, we will go into executive session at 9:25.